must be lights burning brighter somewhere. Got to be birds flying higher in a sky more blue. If I can dream of a better land where all my brothers walk hand in hand, tell me why.
In December 1968, after years of only being seen in not always terrific movies, Elvis Presley reemerged with a live concert on NBC. It's become known as the Comeback Special, and it's one of the great moments in television and rock and roll history. The producer and the director of that special was Steve Bender, who had already racked up some pretty impressive films and television shows, including the TAMI show and great specials with Leslie Uggams and Petula Clark. Steve Bender joins us this afternoon on Downtown. Hi, Steve. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Rich, it's my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
My goodness. I mean, I love the story and have read everything I could about the making of the Elvis special through the years, but we got the book yesterday, and what a beautiful, beautiful book this is.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And I think Hugh Symes, the designer of the book, did an absolutely, you know, excellent job putting it together for us.
Well, it's such a remarkable story. Let's go back a little bit. You and your crew, Bones Howe and everybody involved, you had done a couple very successful specials, the Leslie Uggams special and then the Petula Clark special. What got the attention of Bob Finkel from NBC?
It was the Petula Clark, Harry Belafonte sort of famous touch, as they referred to it, where during Petula had written an anti-war song, and at the time in 68, the Vietnam War was raging on, and students all over the country were protesting the war. And it was a case of where NBC didn't want me to have Petula sing a song that she wrote, not based on Vietnam at all. It was just based on parents sending their kids to go fight a war that, you know, soon after it's over, flowers are growing on the same battlefield where, you know, hundreds, if not thousands, were wounded or lost their lives. And it was questioning why we fight wars anywhere in the first place. And, I convinced NBC to let her sing it since she wrote it, and we put it together as a duet with Harry Belafonte. And we didn't have an audience, so I shot multiple takes of the song. And as a director, I had staged Petula entering the stage and going behind Belafonte over his shoulder. It was, to me, a beautiful director shot. But I'm a great believer that if you can't make an audience laugh or cry or be emotional about what you're doing, I don't care how much money you're spending on sets and costumes and what have you, it's a waste of everybody's time and has no impact. I want to see creativity when I watch anything. I want to feel emotional as an audience when I see anything. And as a result, you know, it was a case of where I had done about four or five takes where nothing was happening, and I just kept thinking, how can I make this happen? And so I told Petula, don't stand the next time behind Harry, just go alongside him shoulder to shoulder. And it just took that to make it, you know, this classic emotional performance by the two of them where Harry looked over, and on the close-up camera, I saw Petula tearing up, and she was actually crying while she's singing it. And it affected Harry, and all of a sudden, his eyes are tearing up. And so as soon as it was over, I ran down to the editing room at NBC in Burbank, and I had the editor erase all the non-touching takes that we had done. Because for sure, I knew NBC would replace the touch with one of those, you know, non-touching. And so I only gave them the option, period, to use the take that I wanted to use. And that triggered NBC calling me saying, we have a deal with Colonel Parker to do an Elvis television special, but we can't get Elvis to do it. And we thought with this controversy and you being kind of, you know, at that stage of your life, a rebel, you know, you might have, and you're around the same age as Elvis, so you might have a lot more in common with him and convince him to do this TV special. The colonel had only gone to NBC not to do television. He wanted them to finance his next movie, which I think was Change of Habit with Mary Tyler Moore. And NBC said, we'll loan you the money or give you the money to do this movie, but only on one condition, that you give us in return a one-hour television special from Elvis. The colonel closed the deal, but never told Elvis. And when Elvis heard about the deal, he said, I'm not doing it. So they were, you know, between a rock and a hard place. And that's when they called me after seeing Petula and Belafonte and the controversy that was shot all over the world in Time magazine and Newsweek magazine, et cetera. And that's what triggered, you know, getting the offer. And I said, I will only do it on one condition. And they said, what's that? And I said, I want to meet Elvis one-on-one. I'd never met him before. I was not part of the Elvis world. And I want to see if we have anything in common. I'm a kid from the West Coast in L.A., and he's from the Deep South in Tupelo, Mississippi, and Tennessee. And I want to see if we want to work together. And so I met the colonel, who gave his approval, and Elvis came to my office the next day at 4 in the afternoon, walked in instantly. I mean, I knew this was the most charismatic person I'd ever met. I mean, he was perfect physically. As a director, I looked at him and said, God, I can shoot this guy from behind on the left side, on the right side. Many, many stars have a favored side where they say, please shoot me on my left side or my right side. This was not the case with Elvis Presley. He was impressed when he saw Olive Bones Howe's gold records on our walls and realized he wasn't just in a world of television. He was in the music business as well. And we went to my office alone, first question out of his mouth is, what do you think of my career? And I said, I just blurted it out. I said, what career? I think your career's in the toilet. And I didn't know if he's going to storm out of my office and leave, or his real reaction was he laughed and said, finally, somebody's speaking truth to me, you know.
And he wasn't,
it just went uphill from there.
He wasn't eager to do television because he had had bad experiences with it early in his career. As he put it, it's not my turf.
Exactly. And he felt, you have to realize in 1968, primetime variety television was dominated and hosted by comedians. And they saw Elvis as a foil for their comedy. And as a result, like Steve Allen, as an example, put him in a tuxedo, put him behind a table with a real hound dog, a live hound dog in front of him. And, you know, he was not being taken seriously as the star that he was. And certainly, you know, after I finished the special, I was one of his biggest fans and realized he really did earn the title of being the king of rock and roll. And when it was acknowledged, not only by the general public of Elvis fans all over the world, but by his peers, and they came out immediately after the first airing on NBC, just raving about Elvis. You know, Elvis always put himself down as a guitar player, yet every guitarist that I ever met in my life to this day acknowledged that Elvis was one hell of a guitar player and musician himself, but was humble enough not to brag about it or anything. And, you know, he was so much fun to work with to begin with because he had a great sense of humor and, you know, and this magical idea triggered by Elvis himself when he came to me early on and said, you know, I rented this house in Beverly Hills, which is about an hour away from NBC Burbank in those days. Now it's a 2 or 3 hour drive back and forth. But he said, do you think there's a chance you could throw a bed into my dressing room and I'll live out here? I'll sleep every night here and I won't waste 2 hours a day commuting back and forth to this home. And Priscilla had just given birth to Lisa Marie. I think she was 3 months old at the time. And so I had Elvis 24/7 for the entire time I was out at NBC and doing the show itself. And as a result, after we finished rehearsing or taping any segments, out of sheer boredom, he went into his dressing room where we had a couple of pianos and jammed until, you know, having a lot of fun reminiscing about old songs that he played. And you know, and I went to the colonel and I said, this is more important than all the money we're spending on sets and costumes and people and dancers and singers. I want to take a camera in there and film it. And the colonel said, over my dead body, as he usually was so negative to any ideas that I had. He wanted his 20 Christmas song show and no dialogue from Elvis to the bitter end. What I never knew, and Priscilla told me a few years after he passed, that the first meeting I had with him, he came home to her and said, I don't care what the colonel says about this special. I'm going with this guy Binder. I got a gut feeling about him. And that explains why I felt all the time I was having confrontations and problems with Parker, why I was never fired. And that was the reason. Elvis stuck to his guns and his word. And, you know, Bob Finkel, the executive producer from NBC, really kept the colonel out of our hair while we were actually doing the show and rehearsing the show by playing games with him, like Liar's Poker. And you know, one time the colonel gave Finkel, they were getting very close at the time, and he gave him a case of Dom Perignon champagne. And Bob was having a dinner party at his home for some special guests and friends. And so he pulled out the bottle of champagne, and it turned out that every bottle was filled with Gatorade. That was typical of their, you know. But Bob was the greatest executive producer because he kept the colonel out of Elvis and my hair, except on certain occasions where he would reprimand us for not having a Christmas song in the show. To the very end, when I finished shooting, I didn't put a Christmas song in the show because Elvis told me it wasn't necessary and he didn't want to do one anyway. Luckily, he did a couple of Christmas songs while he was doing the improv session, like Blue Christmas. Well, one of his guys over the soundtrack was saying, "Sing it dirty, Elvis, sing it dirty." And but that was good enough for the colonel to say, okay, boys, now you can air the show, because he was threatening NBC that if we didn't have any Christmas song in the show, he wouldn't allow the show even to be broadcast by NBC.
Well, and that that improv, Steve, I went back and watched a bunch of clips from the special last night, and that's the heart and soul of the program and the genius of having DJ Fontana and Scotty Moore back. It just seemed to free Elvis up that he became the real Elvis Presley in those moments.
He forgot he was doing a television show. He was having so much fun reminiscing the old days. The interesting point of that whole thing is that it was Elvis who came to me when he heard I was going to recreate the dressing room scenes on the improv on stage. The colonel told me, I won't guarantee you could even use any of it, but I'll let you do it. And I jumped on it. And it was amazing because Elvis said to me, do you think we could get DJ and Scotty to come out here, my original musicians, and play with me? And I didn't realize that when the colonel broke up the trio in the early days, They never saw or played with Elvis before or after, even after we finished bringing them in to do the improv on the comeback special. Elvis never saw them again, either of them, and or played with them. And it was such a tragedy because they all three, during the improv, it was like they picked up from the day before they were together. And I've had that experience myself where I haven't seen somebody maybe for years, and yet we were so close that when we did get together, it felt there was no lapse of time between us, and it was the same feeling. They had such a good time doing it, and there was no rehearsal, no script for them, even though our writers actually wrote a script for the improv, which I put into the book, and it's hysterical. But I said, this is real, Elvis. I'm not going to tell you anything or what songs to sing and what order or anything. Just go out and do whatever you feel like. And, you know, he balked at it, actually. He didn't want to go out there when he called me into the makeup room telling me that he couldn't remember anything he did in the dressing room. He couldn't remember any of the songs they sang. And DJ and Scotty didn't show up until we actually were taping it. And, so there was no any rehearsal, and I don't know any artist that could have just, you know, cold walked out there and performed for 2 hours, and you know, I'm sure Elvis forgot he was doing a television special. He was having so much fun, and you know, and they felt the same way.
Well, it's a remarkable moment in both television and music history, and captured so well in this wonderful new book, Elvis 68 Comeback, the story behind the special. Steve Bender, thank you so much for making time for us today. It was great talking with you.
It was my pleasure, and I thank you again for inviting me. It was great fun. Thanks.